and welcome to Those Forking Fangirls, where we talk all things nerdy book, TV, movie, pop culture, fandoms, and how they integrate into our adult lives. I'm Natasha.
And I'm Christine.
And today, in spirit of Pride Month, we're talking our favorite LGBTQ plus books and TV shows and movies. And we are joined by a very special guest and an old friend, Tiernan!
Yay!
Yes!
From OG BookTube days, the BookTuber.
Yes. Yes, Tiernan kind of like made the name BookTube with his screen name, the BookTuber. It was the first time I saw that phrase. I mean, you started BookTube when you were a wee
child.
Yeah.
Lad. Wait, what is the, which one's lad? Which one's lad? Whatever one
is. A wee lad. Wait, is there a difference?
Lad is the, well, last is
lad
feminine.
The male?
And then
okay, they both sound the same to me. Okay,
I'll take last.
Anyway,
yeah. What are your pronouns, by the way? Do you have a preference?
I use he/him pronouns.
Okay,
I'm not offended by we last though.
How old were you when you started YouTubing? Like a baby?
It was 2010, so yes. I had just turned 12, and I had I had like a little flip camera, and I like set it on top of we had this little fireplace in our basement, and
oh my God. And it recorded in like a weird camera quality.
Yeah, it's like the square. It was a year later though when I made a new channel that was going to be dedicated to books, and that was books. The BookTuber channel. So that was 2011.
Yeah, I mean, pretty back there.
OG.
I mean, I started my BookTube channel in 2010, and I remember finding Tiernan because I think you maybe like commented on something, and I found the name the BookTuber, and I was like, oh my gosh, he's so little. So Tiernan's been in the BookTube community, YouTube community for a long time. We've known him and been at all the different cons together for years. He's a creator and a writer and an avid reader. So thank you for being here to chat with us today. Can you introduce yourself and who you are and your own words?
Yes. No, thank you so much for having me. I mean, you pretty much covered it. I am a writer and a reader. I'm still writing about books and interviewing authors, mostly for this magazine called Queerty now. And
cool.
Yeah, I also write fiction, and I might have a novel at a certain place and a certain process that I hope to tell you about so soon.
Oh, yay! My gosh. That's so exciting.
Yeah.
It's very exciting.
Thanks.
We're going to rapid fire get to know Tiernan before we get into our segments today. All right. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Favorite fandom? What's your favorite fandom?
Okay, it would be like the queer indie pop girlies like Muna, Boy Genius. I would say also like probably the Swifty fandom.
Favorite book of all time?
Cleanness by Garth Greenwell.
I've never heard of Cleanness.
Yeah.
It's not about tidiness, right?
It is the opposite. It's like 9 short stories. They're not really short. There's like a proper word for what this is. Like it's the same character and it follows him while he's like an American teaching in Sofia, Bulgaria. And it's just a lot of different queer experiences and I don't know. He's like one of my favorite writers of all time. And I've read that book so many times. Like I go back to it like an album where I'll just read a story that I feel like reading at that time. And so I have it memorized like a 9-track album to me, you know?
Wow. That's really cool. Wait, so it takes place in Bulgaria?
Yeah. Yeah. Which is, I had never read anything like it before.
Katie just noted that Tiernan is such a good high fantasy name. And since we've known your name for so long, I've never thought about it like
yeah,
that. But it is such a good high fantasy name.
I get a lot of Tyrion Lannister. When I tell people my name, like people like to mess up my name, and so I'll get like a Tristan, a Termin, or
Termin?
Well,
that's terrible.
I get Tyman a lot because in a lot of fonts the R and the N fuse together. Yeah.
Do you know what your name means?
It's an Irish name. I don't know the meaning of the word, but I was named after the doctor who delivered me, Dr. Tiernan.
Oh my gosh.
Wow,
Dr.
What an honor
Tiernan.
To the doctor.
Yeah, Dr. Patricia Tiernan. And
wow.
I still know her. We have a relationship.
Are you friends?
Oh. Yeah. Yeah. Nice. We keep in touch.
We text.
One turn into another.
Favorite vegetable?
Carrots.
Random.
I love some carrots.
Wait, do you like them? Do you like them raw or do you like them cooked?
I like them
raw.
Do you
like them on a train?
I like them on the bus.
All right, let's get away from carrots. This is the slowest.
Wait, Katie asked baby carrots or grown up carrots?
Oh my god!
Baby carrots.
I don't think he carries around a giant carrot like Bugs Bunny.
That's what you think.
Rainy days or 90 degree days?
I would say a rainy day.
I feel like most readers pick rainy day.
Exactly.
Favorite artist?
My favorite artist is Gaga.
Yes.
Taylor's up there for me, obviously, as I'm sure we'll get into.
We have twin favorite artists.
Yeah. Like, I have a giant poster of Gaga in my apartment, and she's also just, like, my OG, I don't know, like, Born This Way, art pop. I was right there with the releases. And...
Yes. Yes, same.
You know.
Toothpaste of choice.
It's the Crest Ultra Whitening Baking Soda.
Your Starbucks order.
My classic Starbucks order is an iced chai with two shots and controversial soy milk.
Why is soy milk controversial?
No one likes it.
It just is. No one likes it.
Everyone's favorite
it was
is
the
milk.
First alternate milk. It broke boundaries.
And we forget about that.
Last one. Favorite Taylor Swift song? Because it's very important to this podcast.
My favorite Taylor song is New Year's Day.
Oh, that's a good one.
What can I say? Hopeless Romantic. I do, like, I'm very organized about my favorites by my favorite artists. Like, I have my top 50 ranked.
Memorized?
Oh, my.
Not memorized.
Okay.
I could tell you my top five.
Okay, go for it.
Okay, so New Year's Day, Cornelia Street, This Is Me Trying, Tis the Damn Season, Clean.
Clean?
Clean.
Oh, everyone loves Clean.
What do you have against Clean?
Christine would skip it all the time. It would piss me off.
I never heard the lyrics until like last year, so I don't not like it. It just feels like I don't know it. It's like a stranger to me.
That's actually surprising.
It's because it came out when I didn't want to listen to any of the songs, I guess. It was my year of angst, and I was just like, 1989 is not Taylor Swift. It's too pop.
You needed like a Lana. You needed your Lana moment at that time.
I did.
I get that. I feel you're such a folklore fan though, right?
Yes.
I feel like Clean is the 1989 track for the the folklore lovers.
But it's like so pop.
I guess, yeah.
Gabby says 1989, it's at the bottom of my ranking, Christine. So I feel that. Oh, I'm so happy that someone else feels this way. Moving into Snap, Crackle, Pop Culture News. On the topic of Taylor Swift. Today in Taylor Swift News.
Every episode.
All right, the big rumor circling around is that Cruel Summer is going to be a single and it's going to have a music video. I feel like she might have said this at one of her performances. Tiernan, can you confirm that?
Yes.
No?
Yeah. No.
Okay. Wait,
don't spoil anything from...
It's not spoiling. She just said that she's going to have it as a single, I think.
Yeah. Okay. So no tour spoilers, but basically, yes, there's a video where... wherever she was this past weekend,
Pennsylvania?
Yeah. She's sitting at the piano and she's talking about Cruel Summer. And she's like, so that song, like, it was my pride and joy from Lover. And it was just about to be a big, like, it was going to be our next single, Summer 2020. And obviously what happened. And, like, over the past several weeks, you guys have made it chart so high, and like whatever numbers it's doing, like it's doing the best it ever has.
Yeah.
And the label decided to make it a single. And whether that means like music video, radio, like
she said, there's going to be a video. It's going to be released from the vault. At least that's the rumor on Twitter.
Yeah. I mean, I hope so. I would love to see it.
And also, today she announced her world tour dates. Oh. So she's taking a couple months off after her South American leg of the tour. And then she's picking back up in February and going to like Tokyo, Singapore, Australia, France, Sweden, Portugal, the United Kingdom, Poland, Germany, like all over. So exciting. For all the people who haven't gotten tour dates yet.
Has she ever?
And
did she do a world tour for Reputation?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I think, yeah. I remember her being in
that was
Australia.
The last one.
RIP Canada. Oh no.
Wait. Oh, Canada didn't get any? She expected you to come to the shows in the United States. Get right. Your passports out, folks.
She was in the northern states.
Yeah. Oh, you should have driven down to Boston or New York.
Like most of like Canada is at the border anyways. They don't really have to drive very far. It's harder for Alaskans to get down here.
Okay. I think we're expecting a lot of Canada right now, actually. Cross the border for your Taylor Swift concert. Katie just had thoughts on AGGGGGTM casting.
Good Girl's Guide to Murder, yeah.
Wait, what? There's casting? What? It's going to be on the BBC. BBC announces Emma Myers and Zane Iqbal. Okay, I definitely said that wrong. To lead a cast of Good Girl's Guide to Murder. Oh, wow. Well, I don't know them, but they look great.
Oh, she's the one. She's the one who's the blondie from Wednesday.
What? Yeah. She looks so different with brown hair. Oh, she's going to be great. Oh, I'm excited. I don't know the guy, though, but I'm sure if he won casting, then he's going to be great, too. Have you read A Good Girl's Guide to Murder, either of you?
No.
I have not.
So fun. Audiobook for sure.
Oh, really?
The audiobook's so good.
When did the book come out? Like, how old?
You know,
is
it came out in the UK first, and then it blew up, and then it blew up here again. So I'm not sure. Maybe like 2019 it came out. I missed the beginning of it.
Okay.
But during the pandemic, everyone was like, read A Good Girl's Guide to Murder. And then I did, and I was like, it gets good. It gets real good in the third book. Natasha, what news do you have for us today?
Bridgerton season 3. So they had Netflix had their big ta-dum conference convention type thing.
Ta-dum?
Ta-dum.
It's called ta-dum.
Ta-dum. Yeah.
I know the noise when you
turn ta-doom. I don't know. Some people were saying ta-doom.
No, it's more ta-dum.
Yeah.
That's how it sounds.
Exactly.
When you turn it on.
They had it down in Brazil and they brought the actors from Queen Charlotte and then also, Penelope, the actress who plays her, Nicola, was in Brazil. They showed off photos only. I was expecting to see like a teaser trailer or like a scene or something, but no scene. I think it has something to do with a writer's strike. It's, I don't know, something like that. And then also, apparently, it's going to be coming out on December 14th. That was leaked information. It's not confirmed yet, but there it is. And the pictures look amazing.
Pictures
they have Yassified Colin.
Yassified?
Sorry, that's my...
What the fuck is Yassified?
It's a term, I think, made by the Black community. My client, Amanda, uses it all the time, so I'm
what
adopting
does it, mean?
It from her. It just means like yes, you know, but like Yassified. Colin looks hot. They made him hot. Penelope looks gorgeous. Her little like curls on her hair, the color, she looks amazing. I'm so excited. It's gonna be so good.
When I saw Colin, I was like, what did they do to him? I feel like they like contoured his face or something because it looks
they definitely
weird.
Gave him a spray tan. He's almost orange.
Yeah, he looks older and more like contoured. And he had an Indiana Jones jacket. And I was like,
he's coming from
Indiana
his travels.
Jones jacket?
He's coming from his
thing?
Travels.
He already did travel.
Well, he's traveling again. That's
no
why
more
he's
travels
tan.
Allowed. Yeah, they looked great. Traveling is his personality now, Amy says. Tiernan, what do you have for us today?
So this week, I saw this on Twitter, and so I've read a little bit more about it. But Disney has announced its first, Pixar's first non-binary character in this movie called Elemental.
Yes.
Which it's this character named Lake, who is like an element, a water element. I'm not sure like the details of characters and how it works with
the
plot.
I've seen
the
movie, so I could tell you.
Oh, you have? Oh.
Yeah, wait. I was going to say Natasha saw it.
Oh, okay. Wait, can you tell us about Lake then?
I need to look Lake.
I haven't seen any spoilers, so I know nothing about it except for what Natasha has told us
Lake?
Last week.
Oh, okay. So what I didn't notice that Lake was non-binary, but I did notice when the water elements like came together or there was some type of interaction or like a romantic interaction on like side characters, you could not tell their gender. So I think I don't know. I think some of the relationships are fluid. So I don't know. I don't know.
Right.
But it's I noticed that. I did not know that about Lake, or if they use they them pronouns. I was not aware of that.
Okay. I have seen a little bit from the internet, and I think there is something there about, like, you know, water fluidity, gender fluidity. There's an element that the internet has picked up on, because the show The Other Two, which I'm not sure if either of you are watching.
I watched the first two seasons.
Okay, so
but I haven't seen the new one.
In a recent episode, Carrie gets cast as Disney's first unapologetically gay character in an animated movie where he plays a literal lump of goo named Globby. And there's this whole thing at the premiere of the movie where people are like, when is Globby going to be gay? And it completely goes over everyone's head. And there's just this really unfortunate parallel between Elemental and this satire from The Other Two.
Here's, like, just from watching it, and because I didn't even notice it, I just feel like this is like their, like, little, like, meager attempt.
Yeah.
Just like in the background, like not even the main characters.
Because they've done this before, haven't they? Been with, like, Beauty and the Beast. If you didn't notice there was a gay couple in the background and they kiss, and it's like, in the background of what scene? What? But the thing about The Other Two is that it's so accurately, it's hard to even call it parodying, because they're like just actually pointing out everything that is wrong with the industry. So when I'm watching it, I'm like, I can't even laugh sometimes, because I'm like, this is real. Like, this is actually how horrible it is.
Yeah. Like, it's so brilliant.
It's really well done, but also I'm like, I'm saddened by
the way it predicted this is like Simpsons level accuracy.
The Other Two is really good.
Amen. It's so good this season.
I need to watch this. This is on HBO, right?
Yes.
It's on HBO, yeah. Okay.
It's on Max.
Max.
Well,
one more thing. This just landed on Twitter. This is a report, not confirmed. Breaking news. Not really. Apparently, Marvel Studios, Universal, HBO will reportedly skip SDCC this year.
That is a lot of shows
and a lot of movies.
Yeah.
Wow.
What the heck?
Be
this is what's really annoying about everyone wanting to make their own conference.
I don't think this is about making their own conference. I think this is about budget, and I think it's about the writer's strike.
Well, if the streamers would just pay the motherfucking writers, we could all move on and have our entertainment.
I wonder what it will be like there this year then. I mean,
I literally just got news that I just got my SDCC badge, and I'm like, what the fuck is gonna be there now?
Yeah, I mean, downfall Twilight. Of the cons.
Oh, did you see this news that The Flash premiered this past weekend, and it didn't
bombed.
Do great. It not as expected. It made under what Black Adam made, and they're like, why? Oh. What do you mean why?
Well, I thought it would do better than that, because they're really trying to eat off of the success of Spider-Man No Way Home.
I mean,
and like the multiple generations of Spider-Man.
I don't think that
Batmans.
They're taking the audiences seriously. Like, we're not stupid. We're not going to go support a movie where like a person.
Oh, with Eliza. I forgot about that. Yeah,
Ezra.
Yeah. No, the Ezra. Yeah. Oops. Ezra Miller and all his controversy. But in the trailer, I was just like, this is a complete, it's all about Batman in the trailer. Of like, I wouldn't even have known this is a Flash movie. They're really just trying to get all the Batman fans to come. And I didn't want to go because it's about the Flash. So I guess everyone saw through that.
Yeah, they should just have cut him out.
Gabby says, I just need a montage of Michael Keaton scenes and I will be happy.
Agree.
All right. So before we move into our main discussion, I want to take a second and thank everyone out there listening. Your support means the world to us. We couldn't do this show without you. If you haven't already, we'd really appreciate if you followed the podcast for free in your favorite podcast app, if you subscribe to the YouTube channel, if you like the visual version, hit the like button on YouTube. This is all very free. Leave us a comment. Like, we love interacting with y'all, and it's really helpful to the show when you interact with us in any way. on rating the show, leaving us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify is super easy. If you have a second and you like the show, it means a lot to us if you do that. And if you want to support the show in a bigger way, we have a Patreon and we've got lots of fun perks over there. The big every week one is called Fangirl Tea Time. We release a half an hour extra show attached to the main show every week where we dig into more personal, deeper topics. Today we've got some stories that's been going on in our life the last couple weeks. I've been on the dating apps. Natasha has had a lot of stuff going on. Mm-hmm. So you can get that if you're our Team Jacob patron or higher. And it's every single week. Lots of content if you subscribe. Yeah.
Okay. So for the main discussion, we are going to be talking, well, it's Pride Month, and we're going to be talking about our favorite LGBTQ+ books and shows. I pulled this from the website Heckin' Unicorn, and it goes, it's no secret that mainstream media struggles with queer representation. It's part of the reason why fan fiction has been thriving since the 2000s. Audiences craved queer characters so strongly that they began to create their own alternative universes and headcanons, ideas held by fans that are not explicitly supported by the content itself. So I kind of wanted to hear, Tiernan, like your thoughts. Like, what were the types of like headcanons that you held while growing up and that you wished you would have seen on screen? And Christine, if you have any, I think I have one if you want to share as well.
I was thinking about this earlier and struggling to come up with like of my favorite things from childhood. I don't think I like knew to wish there was queer content in them. Like it sort of started to appear slow. Like you saw it in the background a bit, but like in these books that were not ever known as queer books, you would see queer characters start to pop up. And that was like what really meant a lot to me.
Type of representation
I mean, because of course there's like the banned books that we all know as the queer books with titles like Two Boys Kissing, where it's like this is a queer book. But then you have the Mortal Instruments that like everyone was reading, and like she snuck some queerness in there, and like people didn't really talk about it because it wasn't. But just to think about every middle schooler, high schooler, and beyond who was reading those books and seeing that. And I even remember I just kind of unlocked this memory today, like in the Gone series by Michael Grant, five books deep, one of the characters comes out.
I was like, I read those. I don't remember that, but I only read the first two.
Right. It's such kind of, it's a small thing and it's like a nice moment. And then of course I think of Percy Jackson, and this does kind of get into the headcanon of it because there's Nico D'Angelo who is a queer character, and he has famously kind of like a crush on Percy Jackson. So like there is, you know, fan fiction to be made of that. But he has gone on to have like the book that just came out this year follows Nico D'Angelo and Will Solis.
Yeah, The Sun and the Star.
Yeah.
That's so, and like about Alec in The Mortal Instruments, I think he was the first gay character that I read in like mainstream young adult.
Because I was reading, it was like simultaneously like coming out with Twilight like back in like 2009.
Yeah, I want to say that the first Mortal Instruments was like 2007. So that was fairly early on.
Right.
In that world.
Especially in YA at that time. I mean, obviously, the ones that come to mind is, like, for me, is, like, Harry and Draco.
Right.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Obviously started Harry and a lot for people, at least, like, for fan fiction sake. I was really into Supergirl, the TV show, and I wanted Kara and Lena Luthor to get together. Lena Luthor is played by Katie McGrath. She's from Merlin, and, like, everyone's in love with her. Like, she's definitely like a girl crush of mine. But I wanted them to be together.
Would you say any shows or like big pop culture fandoms and movies early on were queer baiting? And what are your thoughts on queer baiting in general?
I think readers and viewers are just really smart, and they can tell when a queer character or a queer relationship is coming from a place of obligation versus being an authentic part of the story. And like, I think a lot of writers and creators have had to struggle with like, you know, I want to be inclusive, but like, is it my story to tell? And it's something that I think we'll continue to sort of struggle with. I have felt queer baited in the past, but I would rather see someone trying and like stumbling through a little bit with the best of intentions and like making the wrong move than like, you know,
not doing it at all and like shying away from it.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause that's the danger in like, I don't know, in if someone is trying to be inclusive and then like people say it's queer baiting and then it's like they don't try at all. And it's like the balance.
Sure.
I mean, that has to be struck there, right?
Yeah. We look at this thing with Disney and Elemental and like, Natasha, you watched that movie and like, you didn't know, but yet they're getting the headlines of inclusivity.
They're getting the accolades from it.
Right. And I think we are at a point now where like that's not necessarily going to fly. They're not going to win GLAAD awards because there was like a non-binary character who was water. Like we have enough great queer content now that like the good stuff actually will rise to the top. And
yeah,
like we're not begging for scraps.
What's your favorite show right now with queer rep on TV?
I mean, we already kind of covered this, but like the first thing that comes to mind is The Other Two. It just is pain. It's excruciating to watch that. Like the entertainment stuff is, of course, on the nose and very. But like in this last episode, Carrie finds out sorry if this is a mild spoiler of a plot point, but like
it's okay.
He finds out something exciting about his career and he previously wasn't going to go to his high school reunion. And then once he figures out that he would win the reunion, he like races to go there. And there's this whole thing of like all these other gay characters come in, like having just gotten great news to go and win their reunion. And it just speaks to this like true thing about gay men being overachievers and like overcompensating for being excluded in high school, you know, all of that. Mm-hmm. It's just another one that I really loved is, did you guys watch The Sex Lives of College Girls?
Yes, of course.
Oh my gosh, I forgot about one.
Damn it.
Yeah, so good. Like Renee Rapp's character on there has been so amazing because like she's not always a great person. And and that's something that I have been excited to see recently and like hope to see a lot more of, or like not just gay rights, but gay wrongs.
She has such an amazing arc. And like, that's what we're looking for with any character. And for like the queer character to get that great storyline is so cool to see. And that, oh, I just like, now she's my favorite character on the show. She's gone through so much evolution. Yes. And it's been so beautiful to watch.
Her character, she comes in as like the blonde girl who comes from a lot of money, like all these stereotypes about her gender. And then she just like smashes through them like one by one throughout like both seasons in good and bad ways. And like even because she herself as a character is learning as she goes. For so long, we've not had like proper representation of queer folks in media and books because they've been stereotyped or just from ignorance. And what like book do you think kind of like as Renee did like crash through all of those, you know, gay best friend stereotypes for you where you're like you actually saw yourself represented?
I mean, I felt lucky. The first thing that comes to mind is like I was in high school during like the earlier contemporary Adam Silvera books when they were coming out, like More Happy Than Not and History Is All You Left Me. So those are books that follow like really depressed teenagers who feel super messy and don't want to be who they are, but also in a way are living their authentic lives. But like, it tracked like a very clunky experience. And, you know, a lot of the feedback from that was like, is this the story we should be telling? Is this what we want to show people is the queer experience? And, you know, to even ask that question just illuminates the fact that like we still think of queer content as for straight people. You know, sort of the flip side of that is the Love Simons of the world, where it is like this very buttoned up. You know, I really like that book, and I was grateful for it as well. But it, you know, it's a much more clean version of that story. So people have a range of opinions on all of those things, but I'm sure there's more. Like, one of my favorite YA authors is Abdi Nazemian, and he has this great book called Like a Love Story, and it follows three characters, and two of them are queer guys, and it takes place in the 80s. And there's this line in it that I pulled it up on my Kindle because I wanted to read it when I was thinking about talking to you guys about this, because I think it says a lot about like what we look for in LGBTQ content. One of the characters is talking about Madonna and her album, Like a Prayer. And they say, "Worshipping a gay male star would be too literal for us. We need layers and symbolism. We communicate in code, as does Madonna." That's what I think the Leica thing is about, in Like a Prayer, Like a Virgin. But I think that also shows through in like the kind of content that we gravitate to. Like, some people would probably see themselves more in like a Katniss Everdeen, in like her bravery and fearlessness, and that, you know, relating that to their own experience, than something that is more on the nose, like a Love, Simon.
Yeah, to which have is it no shade. Be just like a part of them, right? Not the lead on the noseness line that goes along with the book.
Yeah.
It's like, I would love, like, as a fat person, like, I would love just to be like represented in like a cute rom-com, and not have it be all about her fatness, but like have it be about like her journey in falling in love and being, you know, like looked past all of that, and, you know, just living her life.
Yeah. And I feel like more and more, though, we're getting those where it's just like part of the character and, you know, goes along with the rest of whatever the plot is, the rom-com or the epic, or like, because the first ones of its kind are usually always very on the nose, right? And then since that's been happening for, you know, maybe 10 years now, it's been trickling more and more into our mainstream, that now it's becoming destigmatized, like, from society, so that people feel freer to like just write these characters and have them on their own journeys that aren't very on the nose about the one thing that makes them different.
Yeah,
right.
Totally.
So, Christine, what would be one of your favorite books?
The one I've read the most times is Red, White, and Royal Blue. If y'all haven't read that one yet, much fun.
Okay, I started the audiobook to this, and it wasn't very good.
What? I've listened to the audiobook 3 times. It's so good.
I don't like the audiobook.
Give it a second.
Okay.
Oh, it's so amazing. I second that.
Yes! Did you read it? Did either of you read it with your eyes, or is it just...
I did the audiobook.
I have read it like with my eyes and ears at the same time, but I've mostly done the audiobook.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I think I'm going to sit down and read it, and then with the audiobook, because I feel like I started it while I was driving and I was like, I can't get into this.
Maybe you're just like in a bad mindset to get into a book, because sometimes that happens.
I have
you're
been
just like
that
your
way
head's
for a while.
In too many places to concentrate. But yeah, it's a great audiobook. I read it, and then I read it to go to sleep like the next 2 times that I read it, because it's very soothing. And like, there's a happy ending because it's a romance novel. If anyone doesn't know, it is the first son of the United States, so like the president's son, and he falls in love with a prince of England. And it has to be kept a secret because they're like so in the limelight, and then, you know, it makes it really hard at first to date. Lots of emails. I love all the emails.
Oh, the emails are so great. Did you read
One Last Stop?
Yeah.
Yes, I did. What did you think?
I love One Last Stop. I like it even more than Red, White, and Royal
Blue. I didn't like it as much because I think I didn't like the fact that she couldn't get off the train.
Yes, I do remember you telling me about this book.
I was like, I just want them to go places together. The concept on One Last Stop, for those of you who don't know, is that our lead character, August, meets this hot girl on the train, and she's like super cool and super chill, and like she immediately has a crush on her. And so then she tries to take the same train, and she'll see her on the train every day. But when she tries to like ask her out, she can't go out with her. And then eventually, like, she starts to realize, like, something weird's going on. And she's like, she can't leave the train. And she always wears the same clothes.
Yes, if you could start to put together the pieces of what that could mean. But it's also just, like, a really beautiful, like, chosen family, early 20s, New York City rom-com. That's what I love about it.
Yeah. No, that aspect is really beautiful. But I'm always, like, in it for the romance, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
And I kept getting so frustrated by the lack of being able to date.
Like, you want them to go on a cute, like, go to the High Line.
Yes. But I still have to read her next book. It's called I Kissed Shara Wheeler. And I have had it on my TBR for a long time, but I have to get the audiobook. This is the thing. Like, if I don't get the audiobook now for things, I never get to read.
Yeah.
I'm picturing the lead as Renee Rapp. Or not the lead, Shara Wheeler, because I feel like so many people on the internet were like, oh my God, it's Renee Rapp. And I was like, oh my gosh, she does look like the girl on the cover.
I can absolutely see that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
did you like that one just as much?
It's amazing. It is like, it's the best YA I read last year, I thought.
Amazing.
It's elite. it was taking me back to like reading the John Green books for the first time, like just how,
oh my gosh,
how good, just like, yeah, I mean, the writing is like at the same level, but it's these like beautiful, messy teen characters. And yeah, I was like, okay, I will read YA all the time again if it's like this.
That's high praise. I'm excited. Whenever Tiernan recommends something to me, I immediately buy it. I'm like, gotta read it. I remember during like 2020, whenever I like said, I need an audiobook, Tiernan would like say something and I just immediately download it.
Oh, nice.
Yes, I very trusted Rex.
That's my favorite thing to hear.
You recommended that one. The one with the sisters.
Vanishing Half?
Yes, The Vanishing Half.
Yeah.
Oh my God, that audiobook was so good. I think you also recommended Addie LaRue, and like, what an amazing audiobook.
Oh my God,
and
yeah.
Also just book in general.
That's a great book.
Yeah, I miss it.
Yeah, and now I own all of Sally Rooney's books because Dunan recommended those, but they're not an audiobook, so I haven't read them.
They're better with your eyes. Oh, what I could talk about is on the rom-com side, have you guys read The Charm Offensive and or Kiss Her Once For Me by Allison Cochran? They're really, really amazing queer rom-coms. The Charm Offensive is like this bachelor type show where...
Oh, I've seen these all around. Okay. All right.
Yeah. So this guy goes on The Bachelor, a bachelor type show, sort of in an attempt to like save his career and public image. And he ends up falling in love with the producer of the show, who's a guy, instead of any of the contestants.
Oh my gosh, is there another book like this from Wednesday Books, like with a similar concept? Like, is that We Are Never Getting Back Together?
Oh, I remember coming up with that title when we were trying to think of I'm not sure. I don't know that book too well.
Yeah, but I think it has a similar concept, like the falling in love with the producer.
Yeah,
sort of. Or falling in love with just a girl on the show, and it was The Bachelor. And
right.
Maybe.
Oh, it's so good. Like, there's a mental health element too that is like really nicely executed, and her follow up, Kiss Her Once For Me, is sort of like a Christmassy rom com where it's the trope of like, what's the right name for it, where it's like dating of convenience, because like
marriage
he
of
can't
convenience?
Get yeah a marriage of convenience,
like stuck in the same place sort of a thing.
She agrees to marry this guy because if he doesn't have a wife, he can't get his grandfather's inheritance,
and so marriage of convenience,
they're gonna get married and split it. But at the same time, the lead character, she has this like last Christmas romance with like this one day magical affair that ended terribly, and we don't know what happened. So
I love one day things.
Yes. So this is like a thorn in her past, and then she goes to this guy's Christmas and meets all of his family, and guess who his sister is?
Oh shit.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
That's so fun.
It's so good. Like, that's just the beginning.
I want to add that to my TBR.
Yes.
Natasha, what's your favorite that you've read?
I read Song of Achilles last year by Madeline Miller. Have you read this, Tiernan?
I have.
So everyone's read this, I feel like, except me.
It's funny because Alex and I just went through this whole like rewatching of like Troy and Immortals and all of that. And I'm
Well, Achilles is not Greek, actually, but it has roots in obviously he's Achilles. And it's such a beautiful, terrible, gorgeous story. I cried so much. The audiobook is fantastic. I read this book off of just people like being like, this is an amazing book. You should read it. Okay, so during the Greek heroic age, it's an adaptation of Homer's Iliad told from the perspective of Patroclus. The novel follows Patroclus's relationship with Achilles and their initial meeting to their exploits during the Trojan War, with focus on their romantic relationship.
Is it a war romance?
Yes, it is.
Ooh, interesting.
Have you never seen the movie Troy?
I've seen the movie Troy. It has Brad Pitt.
Yes.
Brad Pitt
plays Achilles. Now think of have Brad Pitt playing Achilles in your mind the whole time while reading it. It's a beautiful play.
It's a beautiful story.
It's a beautiful story if you picture Brad Pitt.
That totally makes it. Brad Pitt signed my Troy DVD.
What?
Oh.
Not to name drop, but my aunt by marriage's godparents are his parents. So that's when they got married. When he got married, my uncle got married to her. His parents got us a signed copy of Troy. This is so irrelevant, but like it was such an exciting thing in my life when I was like 11.
Nice.
It's like one of those things you put on like an icebreaker.
A signed copy of Troy from Brad Pitt.
Fun fact.
Let's talk about some TV shows because there are so many good ones out there at this moment in time, like by 2023. Mm-hmm. Like when I sat down to think about it, I was like, oh my God. I have way more than I wanted. I wanted us to limit it to like three because of time. But then I was like, no, I have like seven. Sorry.
Have y'all watched Dickinson?
Yes. That's my number one.
Dickinson seasons one and two are everything. Like not only does it have like an amazing relationship running through it, but like it inspires me to write. Like every time I watch one, I just feel so empowered to go like pick up my fucking pen and like create some sort of masterpiece.
Also, like, nothing gives me the greatest joy on the planet Earth when costuming and hair and makeup is right, but then also we have the modern like music and the way
the
that they talk
so
and it's just like, okay, that's all I want in life. I just want beautiful outfits that actually are from the time period and then some like, you know, twerking to music. That's my favorite.
So Emily Dickinson is what Dickinson is about, and she's played by Hailee Steinfeld and she's perfect. And her best friend and her are actually like in love, but it takes place during like the Civil War in like the 1860s. And so, you know, they're both expected to marry. Emily never gets married. She's like, bitch, no. But her best friend ends up being courted by her brother. And it's this whole situation where, you know, she loves her brother, but also like she's with her best friend. So this is uncomfortable. It's like this weird love triangle. And their relationship is so sweet and beautiful. And like her poems, like I didn't have like an appreciation for poetry really until Dickinson made poetry beautiful for me because I had a story behind all these poems.
Yeah, it's so beautiful how they weave her poetry into the episode arcs too.
Yes.
And her voiceovers.
Didn't you just get the chills every time she like starts writing a poem?
Yeah.
Like, yes.
I remember skipping ahead to the episode where they play Ivy.
I don't even remember that.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Wait, is this in season three?
I don't remember. I think it was 2021.
Because that was season three, I think. Yeah.
It's at the end of an episode, and I think it is like a sexy scene with Emily at the end, and she like gasps, and then it cuts to black, and you hear, "How's one to know?"
Oh my gosh.
So good.
Taryn, right. What's another favorite show of yours?
I'm excited for Heartstopper to come back.
Oh my gosh, it's coming back soon, right?
Yeah.
July, I heard.
Yeah, it's coming. Yeah, I'm not sure the exact date. I remember reading those graphic novels during the pandemic, and it was just like,
I had no idea they were graphic novels.
Oh, they're so good.
Barnes & Noble.
Yes. I would just like read one a day, and it was just like the most joyful experience. The show is great. It's a romance between these two high school boys. And also they're like groups of friends and
I just
British.
Remembered Sex Education when you were talking about high school.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's
yeah.
another great one.
Yeah. That I was also going to talk about Generation on HBO that only got one season. This is 2021. I absolutely devoured that and it is not coming back. But
aww.
Yeah.
Heartstopper. I never watched that, but I saw that it had that guy in it. What is his name?
Justice.
The guy from the Pokemon movie. Yes. Smith.
Yeah.
Heartstopper comes back one season. On August 3rd, for anyone who's wondering.
Oh, amazing.
Okay. The day before my birthday.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. And really great mental health discussions in Heartstopper, too, Amy says. So true.
Nice. Natasha, what's on your list?
Interview with a Vampire. I'm talking about the new show that just came out.
It's on FX or something?
Yes. It was done so well. And the two actors who are playing Louis and Lestat. I don't know, because I don't remember the movie very well, but like they go into heavy detail with these two and it's amazing. It's so hot and they have so much chemistry. It is a great, great show. I don't know if you guys have you watched it?
I have not, but you're selling
me. Season two is coming probably next year. The guy who plays Lestat has like this really gorgeous deep voice and it just makes the whole
it's got an audiobook voice.
Yes. It's my favorite. It's vampires and also in like turn of the century with amazing costumes.
I can't not mention Killing Eve. Because yes. What a spectacular... Okay, I didn't love the last season and how it ended.
Yeah.
But I love Killing Eve so much. It is about a serial killer. And the agent that is hunting her has a crush on the serial killer. And the serial killer has a crush on the agent that's hunting her. And they have so much chemistry. And I'm like in love with the serial killer. Why am I blanking on her name? Because I love her name so much.
Jodie Comer.
What is it? Yes, but her character's name is beautiful.
Oh,
let's see.
Sekvana, something Vana.
No, wait, hold on.
Oksana.
Killing.
Oksana?
Villanelle.
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 That's right.
Villanelle. Oh my God. I was just like, Villanelle is the coolest serial killer you'll ever encounter. I had a huge crush on her watching it. And I'm like, why do I love this serial killer? Why do I want her with Eve so much? Because she's clearly bad for Eve, but I don't
clearly
care.
Clearly bad for anyone.
She's a serial killer. But I really want her to find her humanity. I'm rooting for them so hard. And Eve is obviously morally torn. It has so much great morally gray drama and so much exciting murder. Like Villanelle, if you haven't watched the show, is a serial killing artist. She'll leave you with some death art to find. And it's always fun to see how she murdered her victims in the show.
There's some good ones.
There's some real good ones. And her outfits. Oh, I want to cosplay as her so bad.
She's iconic.
She is. She wears these amazing suits. And I'm like, where can I find a suit like that?
And she's not just a murderer. She's an assassin for hire.
Yeah, it's more of the assassin.
It's she's a working person, you know? She's hustling.
Yes. Yeah, she's getting paid good monies for these kills. Yeah, I'm kind of describing it wrong because it looks like a serial killing because of how she leaves it, but actually she's a hired professional assassin.
Mm-hmm. Which makes it just a little bit better.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you would do it too for a check.
I wanted to talk real quick about Fire Island. Have you guys seen this?
No, I always...
Fire Island.
Is it a movie?
It's a movie. It's on Hulu.
Oh. Yeah.
Every time you mention it, I think of the festival, and that's what I think it is.
The title is unfortunate. It is a modern retelling of Pride and Prejudice, but all queer people. All queer men, I would say. It is so smart. It is so hilarious. I like laugh out loud, and I don't laugh out loud a lot of things. Laugh out loud at this movie, and then if we follow this group of queer friends, and they all go to I think one of the guy's aunt's house on this island, and the whole island I think is this
gay vacation getaway type of situation. And so there's like all these big parties here and there. And they go to this big party one night and enters the Darcy character, and it's his house, and there's a Bingley character, and one of them gets like affronted by the Darcy character. And so we follow this like, you know, cute rom-com with the Darcy and Lizzie character and then the Bingley character throughout Fire Island as they go to different parties and they party all night. Oh, they maybe sleep together. They're at like someone's house. They have to go bring them back home the next morning. It's just, it's really smart and it's really fun. And if you love Jane Austen, you should also watch this. But also, if you don't love Jane Austen, just watch it. It's great. I love, I as being a huge fan, I love seeing all like the similarities in it.
I love hearing it appreciated like that, because I mostly just hear about it as, you know, like the queer Hulu rom-com with you know, sort of the who's who of comedy queer people, like Joel Kim Booster. And yeah, Bowen Yang, Matt Rogers. There was that, and then Bros that came out last year.
Bros was so funny. I was like, why isn't more people talking about this? It was hilarious.
Right. It was a whole thing with the box office.
Okay, so I really love the way they talk about sexuality in Hacks. I don't know if y'all have all watched Hacks on HBO, but it's so open and so normal for our lead character to talk about her sexuality with this really much older woman. I feel like the way they talk about it is so accessible to maybe anyone who is unfamiliar and older. And I think it's a really great way to open the doors of different sexuality to them, different avenues and all that stuff, because she like our other character goes through a really nice arc. Our older character, her name is Jean, the older actress in the beginning, she's like, can you shut up about like all your like your sexuality shit 24/7? You're like way too open with me. But like the openness is destigmatizing all the shit that she's like, oh, scandalous. Like, you know, the stuff that you'd like put a hand over your mouth when you hear.
There's that really awesome episode in season two.
In season two.
On the cruise when she's, Deborah Vance is playing to these lesbians and she's like.
Yes, the lesbian cruise.
I sort of like relate to them and they really like me. And her writer, Gen Z millennial type, is like, well, have you examined your attraction to, you know, like, have you thought about, you know, your sexuality? And it, you feel so locked in. And then there's like a funny moment where that comes back to bite her. I mean, it's sort of just like, she calls back to it later.
She has to learn a lesson.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
It's so well, that it's such a good episode. And there's this like beautiful moment where she's painting her nails, like, she's painting the Gen Z's nails, the older woman, and they're talking about sexuality. And it's like she's the older woman's just really opening her mind to like all the different possibilities of like, can she be attracted to women? And like what her writer, like her, what she experiences and how she's the time she's having on this cruise with all these like winded women. And it's really, really nice. And it's so fucking funny. It's so good.
It's amazing. It's another one where season two just like took it up
to
a notch. Yeah.
Are there any other shows we have to mention before we go into what right now? Or books? We only talked about one book. Anyone have like a book you want to talk about here?
We both have The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo.
Yes.
Yes.
I mean,
oh my gosh.
It's so big that all of you might have read it already. But if you haven't, The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo by Taylor Jenkins Reid.
Get into it.
Did you want to say anything else, Natasha?
I mean, this was like maybe like the first book that I read where I was just so deeply in this story and I like fell in love with her as she was telling, well, fell in love with the woman that she was talking about.
Cecilia St. James.
Yes. And it just made me so terribly sad and devastated for their lives, but also like incredibly happy. It was such a, like a beautiful story. And I like, and it's so sad that it had to happen during that time in the world and not now, you know, where it could have been accepted.
The Taylor Jenkins Reid Renaissance is happening.
It's amongst us.
It is coming. I don't know if you guys have seen like the, if you are attacked with these on TikTok, like the gayler edits of her with like
I've seen them,
which
yes.
I don't usually think all that much about Gaylor, etc., but like there are so many pretty at least fun to watch TikToks of like clips from the audiobook of Evelyn talking about Celia with clips of Taylor and Carly Kloss, and I am Evelyn Hugo.
That'll just send you in a whirlwind,
right?
Yes, like, and like showing the seven husbands is all her like previous
her boyfriends.
Yeah,
and I think they'll be much more interested in my wife.
Oh my gosh.
Where the gaylers get me.
Me too.
Anything else on the book list here? I really love The Sky Blues. What an adorable high school rom-com by Robbie Couch. I've also listened to that book to fall asleep.
Oh yeah.
It's really funny and really adorable and heartwarming and loved it.
I really want to read The Captive Prince by C.S. Passat. And I know people say, like, it's toxic. Listen, I read a lot of toxic books and I want to read this so bad. Have you heard of this, Tiernan?
It's The Captive Prince.
Yeah,
I have heard of it. Yeah, but I haven't read it yet.
I made my friend Francis read it and he's like, bitch, you gotta read this now.
Yeah.
Okay. I think it's like a high fantasy novel where, again, a prince is held captive. And I think he falls in love with like his captor. Listen, it sounds terrible, but I'm all about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think I would like it.
That's Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah, exactly.
But imagine Brad Pitt.
Yeah.
Still hate the Beast. I can't get on board even with Brad.
I'd also like to mention Schitt's Creek because I also love everything with their like family dynamics and like how casually David talks about like the wine and like how he doesn't care about red or white. It's more about like the person. And I feel like that was the first time I saw like a pansexual character on a TV show. And I thought that was really cool because I feel like also a lot of people are like, what is that?
Yeah.
Opening that up to everyone.
Definitely. It had a really kind of like both accessible but also very true to life, very like funny representation, like all of his relationships with his family members. The romance in there is just like, it's the best.
So cute.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
And it, that's what I was thinking. And like sort of brought back, I don't know, I feel like we have Schitt's Creek to thank for even a non-queer show like Ted Lasso taking off. Like, we were just ready for that kind of comedy again.
Mm. Like the really happy comedy?
Yeah, just the feel-good streaming. Yeah.
The relationships are so, so wonderful in Schitt's Creek. And in the beginning, everyone's comes off like really annoying and terrible, but by episode two you're like in love with, at least in love with David. Like, it's really easy to fall in love with David, and then slowly you're in love with Alexis and the dad, and then the mom came last for me. But eventually you love Moira too.
Oh, I love her. She's the favorite for me.
She really annoyed me at first, but by season three, I was like, she's amazing.
Yeah.
We're going to move into What Right Now?
What Right Now?
What was that? What?
I added a bunch of sound effects to the desk, but that wasn't a good one to transition.
Hey, that would have been better.
That was a scream. I thought it was your dog.
I don't know why that one's even in here.
Christine, that sounded like what you sounded like when I logged on.
When Tiernan logged on, I was having a fight with my microphone. That was an accident. I'm sorry. What Right Now? Tiernan, what are you reading right now?
I'm actually reading The Sun and the Star.
I'm listening.
I'm having fun with it. You know, to like everything we've talked about with queer books and things being shoehorned versus coming across more naturally. Like, I loved Trials of Apollo. And that followed, obviously, Apollo, who is a bisexual Greek god. And, like, it's mentioned plenty throughout the series, but it's not so much acted on, I guess, in the term, in like, he doesn't date or anything like that. And so this, The Sun and the Star, it's sort of, honestly, it feels pretty fan service-y. I mean, I'm probably on camera in my Trials of Apollo video saying, like, give us the Nico D'Angelo solo book. Like, we all wanted it. And
then,
like,
you get it and you're like, this is fan fiction.
Yeah. And I mean, but obviously, like, we love Rick Riordan. He partnered with Mark Oshiro, who's a brilliant YA writer. It has all of the good things. Like, they're going on a quest. It's very suspenseful. Like, but every now and then, there's just this reminder of, like, and we're gay. And it'll like, go into the... It follows Nico and Will. Like, Will, son of Apollo, I'm pretty sure. And...
Yeah, he's a
okay.
Apollo.
And Nico, son of Hades. So, like, they're a great couple. Like, always was a big fan of them in the books. And so now they're on this quest. It feels like there's an extra 100 pages of content throughout that is just, like, a flashback to something cute that happened between them once. That, like, we we didn't used to get that for even, like, a Percy and Annabeth. Like, it feels a little unnatural. And I'm only halfway through. So, like, I could come around to it, but that's just where I am, honestly, right now.
Do you think because does it feel just aimed toward a younger audience than the normal Percy Jackson? And that's why it's, like, feeling really on the nose?
I feel like my standards have stayed high for Rick Riordan because I loved Trials of Apollo so much. And like, I
have to read that one.
Yeah, I didn't think that.
I've only read the first book.
Oh, yeah. They're so good. Like, so funny, just as adventurous. And, you know, obviously you can recognize the middle grade voice. But, like, I think my struggles with the Nico book aren't even about, like, youthfulness.
Yeah, they're not,
like,
about that at
it's
all.
It's not that I wish there was even more mature content. I wish there was less.
Natasha, what are you reading?
I'm still reading Twisted Love by Anna Huang. It's getting a little bit better because it was really hard
remind
to get into.
Remind me what this one's about.
I didn't really go into it last week. It's okay. I picked it up because it reminded me of the Paper Princess series. It's a romance novel about a very alpha male dude and...
Oh, yeah, you said, like, you might be over the alpha male sort of.
Yeah, and, like, he moved into this girl's brother's house because the brother, like, went on, or is, like, traveling for a year. And he's like, I really need someone to look after my sister because she has, like, this scary ex-boyfriend, blah, blah, blah. And this, like, alpha whole dude has, like, he's, like, really rich, obviously. And he, like, owns his own company, obviously. And, anyways, he's moved in next door to, like, keep his eye on her, and then, like, things are starting to happen. It's really not keeping my attention, and I'm definitely not selling it very well.
You sound so unenthused.
I'm just, like, for, like, some spicy things to happen. That's all I'm waiting for.
I've gotten deep into Thanks for Listening by Julia Whelan, and I'm really enjoying it. I'm, like, past the halfway mark, and, of course, we know Julia Whelan is the... fantastic Audible audiobook narrator who did all of Emily Henry's books and all of Taylor Jenkins Reid's most recent novels. Like, she's excellent. Anyway, so she's now writing her own novel, and it's, what tropes do I say? It's got, like, letters being written back and forth and, like, the fate trope, and it's really quirky in a way that I wasn't expecting. Our lead character has an eye patch and she wanted to be an actress, and now she does audiobooks because she was in an accident and, like, she feels like she can't be in the roles that she wants to be in because she has an eye patch and, like, she'd be pigeonholed into, like, a pirate or something, you know.
I did not know that was the situation for her in that book.
Yes, she's really insecure about the way she looks now. Aww. Like, it's been 7 years, and she's become an audiobook star. Like, everyone loves her audiobooks. She does more, like, literary books, because, and then she also does romance, but she has a secret, like, romance
name pseudonym so that like she can still get like literary awards and not be pigeonholed into romance. And it opens up with her at a romance convention. Yeah, convention. And she's moderating a panel. And after the panel, she is like at a bar and this guy comes up to her and like they hit it off and he's like leaving on a plane that night. And they end up hitting it off and have a great night together. And his flight gets delayed and then he leaves the next morning. And then she gets roped into doing a romance novel, even though she says she doesn't want to do them anymore because it pays a lot of money. And it's a favor to a romance novelist who just passed away. She wanted her to do her book. Mm-hmm. And she's doing it alongside the most famous romance novel audiobook guy, Brock McKnight. Everyone thinks he has the sexiest voice of all time, and no one knows who he is. Guess who he is?
The guy she spent the night with.
Yeah, but before they like realize that, they're like texting like about the book because they're narrating, but from different spots. So they're like conversing about how they're going to do different voices and stuff, and then they hit it off, and like they have like a really fun text relationship. It's really fun.
Brock McKnight. Yeah. What?
Brock McKnight. It's really fun. And like, I'm literally hearing my life narrated in Julia Whelan's voice in my head right now because I've been listening to it nonstop because it got to like a really good part.
I love when that happens, when they become the voice in your head.
Yeah, I'm like, oh my God, what's happening? It literally hasn't happened to me until now. Like, I'm usually good at separating my own voice.
I listened to two Julia Whelan books that were very different, a literary fiction into a romance, actually, very recently. Nice. It was I Have Some Questions for You by Rebecca Mackay into Happy Place, Emily Henry.
Amazing.
Like, couldn't be more different books, but like both her, and it was really tripping me up. But she became the voice in my head because she had taken on all these different moods.
I was literally like, Christine came to sit by herself. Like, when I was like coming to set up for podcasting,
Christine screamed into the mic.
All right, what have you watched this week on TV, y'all?
Guess what? I'm back on the Outlander train.
Even with Brianna.
Turns out you can skip season 5 and 6. And still.
Wait, so should I watch this new season?
Is
it good?
Yeah, why not? All you need to know is that they have a house on the ridge.
And they already had a house on the ridge last I saw.
And there really nothing else has happened. Okay.
Well, didn't he get like chicken pox or something bad?
It doesn't matter. He's alive still.
Okay. Is Brianna gone?
No. They're all stars. Right. Brianna is pregnant again. I don't know if I necessarily want to get my heart broken again after this final season because I just know it's going to be like honestly very sad. So we'll see. But we're at the American Revolution.
I love American Revolution stuff. I'm excited for them to meet George Washington and Hamilton and like rap. I feel like I just want to see that collaboration.
Tierney, what have you been watching?
I've been rewatching Girls.
Oh, Adam Driver.
Yes.
Oh. I only watched that because I was obsessed with Adam after The Last Jedi.
Girls always made me sad, so I stopped watching it.
Yeah, it doesn't make you happy, for sure. Like,
that's for sure.
I mean, I first watched it in college, so they felt decently a few steps away. But now I am the age that they are, and it's pretty brutal. It's pretty, yeah, it's hard.
I was the age that they were, I feel like, and I was like, I don't do any of this stuff.
Lucky
this is
you.
A lot.
Yeah, super messy, but also just like a time capsule to the 2010s in so many ways. And I don't know.
Is it though?
For some, for like messy Brooklynites.
They were such horrible people. I just feel like, weren't they horrible people?
Yeah.
I can't, maybe I'm misremembering.
No, they are. They're all pretty hateable in their own ways.
Okay, I watched Jonas Awful, which is the first episode of Black Mirror, because I saw Alexis Rose from Schitt's Creek, and I was like, I need to watch this, even though Black Mirror a lot of the times really is depressing and scares me. But Joan is Awful was not depressing or scary. It was maybe the most happy ending episode of Black Mirror I've ever seen. So recommend if you want to watch a non-depressing episode of Black Mirror that actually gets comedic at moments, like I was laughing because it got funny. Like what's happening is like horrible and like upsetting, but it's very funny the way that it's dealt with. And really interesting, like all Black Mirror episodes that are good are like interesting and like set you thinking about things. And it feels very relevant in our culture right now with AI being such a hot topic and what it could mean for the future of entertainment. And yeah, it's really good.
Wow.
It's not like my favorite Black Mirror episode because it almost like has to be creepier for me to like really think it's like top tier, but like it was the perfect amount of creep for me to watch at night alone, right? Which is very low creep. Basically, like this woman Joan goes through her day and she has to like fire someone, and like it's obviously upsetting to have to fire someone, and her ex is texting her and she's engaged now to someone new, and her ex is like, I'm in town, I miss you, like can we meet up? And she's like, oh okay. And she meets up with him and they end up kissing, and then she goes home to her fiance and he's like, what do you want to watch? On Streamberry, which is Netflix. And up on Netflix is this show called Joan is Awful, which is her name, and the actress Selma Hayek is dressed just like her and has the same hair as her, and she presses play on it and it's literally her day. She's watching her day happen dramatized, and she's sitting next to her fiance as like these texts come up that she sent to her ex, and it's horrifying.
Yikes.
Oof. Yeah. So it was fun in a yikes sort of way.
I want to watch that. Okay.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Okay, movies.
Movies. All right.
I watched Extraction 2, which is on Netflix.
How was it?
It was actually much better than the first one, in my opinion, but it is still an action movie. So, Christine, you would get bored. Christine doesn't like watching action movies. She says she falls asleep during it.
I do fall asleep.
Listen, this movie is actually really beautifully done as far as action goes. There is a full 20-minute, what is it called? One camera shot, a oneer. Yeah. Okay, well, it's not like a one. Like, there's definitely, they use tricky things to make it seem like a oneer, like they did in 1917, like where they cut it. But it takes you on a ride. It is amazing. Like the fight choreography is something else. Like it is pretty well done. Now there's not a lot of character development, which you can expect, but it's still great because it does its one thing really well, and it's its action scenes.
All right. That's a glowing review.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed it. I had a fun time watching it. Alex and I were like, whoa. Like trying to figure out where they cut it too.
Tiernan, what'd you watch?
I recently watched You Hurt My Feelings. Do you guys know this movie with Julia Louis-Dreyfus? It's in theaters.
Wait a minute. I saw a thing for it. Okay.
Yeah. Go ahead. She plays an author and her husband is a therapist, and then they have a 23-year-old son. So it's sort of like a comedy drama about their life, but basically she's trying to sell her next book. Her agent is telling her, or is like, not, it's not happening, but she had like a semi-successful memoir recently, and there's this really funny scene where she's at the bookstore and she puts her memoir like over her famous competitors in the bookstore. Okay. And then this like great shot,
so real.
She like walks out of the bookstore, the employees come over and notice it, and then they like turn over it, see her face on the book, and look out the window, and she's there watching. It's just really great.
Perfect.
But then one day she overhears her husband talking about how much he does not like her new book, when he has been telling her that he does. And so trauma ensues from there. But it's, yeah, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, like, she's just so funny and
brilliant
in it.
I rewatched The Princess Diaries for the first time in a really long time, and I realized that I really never appreciated how good Anne Hathaway is at physical humor in this first Princess Diaries. She's very funny. I mean, she's very clumsy all the time in it, and I remember just like, ugh, like typical clumsy, like nerd protagonist. But now watching it, I was like, oh, she's good at this.
Yeah.
This is an art. And so I had a lot of fun with the first one. And then I tried to rewatch the second one. And it just reminded me that I just really don't like Chris Pine. I feel like he's a nothing burger as a personality.
No.
A nothing burger.
No, I did not agree with that.
I feel
at all.
No chemistry between them. What? None. I feel none.
You're wrong.
No, I just don't think he's like fun at all.
He is so fun.
I don't want to get into this. Maybe. Maybe he'll win me over in the Dungeons and Dragons movie. Maybe it's because I don't think he's that attractive compared to other Chris's. So.
Just picture him as Brad Pitt.
I think Brad Pitt would have so much chemistry with literally anyone. He oozes chemistry with every person. There was so much chemistry between him and Channing Tatum in The Lost City. So good.
Well, him and Sandra Bullock too is great.
Yeah, everyone he interacts with, it's like, whoa, I can see them together. Like him and Leo in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. It's like, I love this.
It's true.
We are going to move on to Mary Kiss Cliff.
Katie says, young Chris Pine always reminds me of Dimitri from Anastasia. And yes. Oh my gosh, I think you're right.
Yes.
I think you're very right.
Yeah. I agree with that.
I do too. All right. But I am attracted more to the cartoon than I am to actual Chris Pine. Dimitri was like really cool.
Okay. So today's Mary Kiss Cliff, we have Lady Gaga, Drew Barrymore, and John Krasinski. It's a very random group of people.
How?
At first,
it's a talent. Don't even ask her.
I know. At first, I was just going to do J names, but then I was like, I don't like all these people. So then I just threw in randoms. So.
Well, Joanne, you know.
Joanne, yes. Okay, maybe like subconsciously linked there.
I think marry Drew Barrymore because she's wonderful and very evolved at this point. And kiss John Krasinski. No. Kiss Lady. No. I don't know. I guess I'll cliff John Krasinski. I can't cliff Lady Gaga. So bye, Joe. Oh my God, what's his name in The Office? Jim. I was going to call him Joe. Bye, Jim from The Office. I'll literally like kill John because the others have more to give, Katie says. They really do. We can't go on without Lady Gaga's music.
Oh, yeah.
And we can't go on without the Drew Barrymore show. So we can go on without another season of Jack something.
Ryan.
Jack Ryan.
Jack Ryan.
Jack Reacher.
We certainly can. The billboards are nice at LAX to come into, but.
Okay. Here's what I'm going to do. I am going to marry Drew Barrymore. I'm going to kiss Lady Gaga like Christine. And I'm going to cliff John Krasinski because then Emily Blunt will be available.
Poor Emily Blunt, though. She's got kids. We didn't think about this.
It's okay. Drew Barrymore and I will take care of her.
Bring her in.
She'll bounce back.
You should have put Emily Blunt in this, not John Krasinski.
I should have. I didn't think about Emily. I always forget that Emily Blunt exists because what? I don't associate the name Emily Blunt with Emily Blunt. I just think of that guy who sang that one song, the Blunt. You know, that there's that artist with the last name Blunt.
James Blunt.
James Blunt. I always think of him as the Blunt and not Emily Blunt.
Huh.
Like I merged them.
I think he would love to hear that.
Taryn, what would you do?
Well, I'm gonna say, like, if John Krasinski was still Jim from The Office, I might have a slightly different answer here, because like that was adorable, but now he annoys me in the same way. Okay. Like, I don't need the muscles. I don't need Jack Ryan. But I think I'd marry Gaga. You know, she's my number nice. One. She's my ride or die. She's gonna
be... Yeah.
I'd probably kiss Drew Barrymore because I just feel like, you know, if you're on her show, you're basically kissing her anyway. You know, like just the proximity just feels very natural to her. I feel like she's probably a good kisser. and then I'd cliff John. Bye, John. Sorry.
We all cliffed John.
That was a test.
All right. We're going to move into our first ACMAF chapter chat. Tiernan, have you read any of these books?
I haven't. Is it too late? All right.
It's not too late.
No,
but like,
it's definitely not.
It's definitely not too late, but there's no spoilers really in this first two chapters. If Are you going to be okay?
Oh, yeah, go for
hearing
it.
Hearing what happened in the first two chapters.
Please, I can't.
All right. So we started ACMAF after 100 years of reading ACOTAR. And... really, not much happened in the first two chapters. Like, Feyre is all still dealing with all the shit that went down at the end of ACOTAR. She had to murder people, and it really obviously had a profound effect.
Really?
And she's throwing up and having nightmares about it, and she's not talking about it at all with her partner. She's just, like, pushing all the feelings down and pretending everything's fine. They're both mutually doing that. Tamlin is not talking about anything that's bothering him, but he's clearly bothered as well. And they're like, we don't want to let Aramantha win and let her know that she's affecting us. And it's like, well, if you never talk about how things are affecting you, they're never going to stop affecting you.
I don't think they care too much about mental health in Perinthian, but...
Well, they do in Rhysand Land.
That's true. Rice and land. but yeah, I like, she was trying to throw up quietly, which that's what I took away from this chapter, is that she was trying not to what?
She's trying not to wake him up while she was throwing up.
Yeah, and then she gets back in bed and she's like, his breathing stops and isn't even, and I'm wondering if he's awake and he just doesn't want to talk about it. Like, wow, what a caring partner. Yeah.
And then she wants to leave the house. It's been 3 months, and he's just keeping her in the house like a little doll. He doesn't want to get messed up. Mm-hmm. He's too afraid that she's going to get hurt, even Don't though be. She's an immortal fae now.
It's not safe.
And she's like, I want to come to town with you. And he's like, I can't handle that. There are beasts still that I'm going to kill. And there's so many Naga. Did you hear how they pronounce Naga in this book? But weren't they Naga in the last book?
Yeah.
I was like, I don't like Naga. That doesn't sound, and it sounds like a funny sound.
He's like, well, I could help, like, you know, bring food to people. And he's like, no, you can't. You stay here.
Yeah.
Locked up.
Do this for me. Anyway, and we meet Ianthe. I don't remember why we grow to hate her fucking guts in book 3, but we do. And she's a priestess, and she's helping plan the wedding between her and Tamlin. And she's like, aren't you excited about the wedding? And Feyre's like, I guess.
Well, because we also learned that, like, Tamlin asked her to marry him 2 months ago.
Yeah. Yeah. And she was like, really excited at the time, but now she's like, sure, I'm excited. And that's a sure sign that you're not. So Anthe's like this beautiful priestess, and she thought that when he talked about Anthe being a priestess, she was like celibate, but actually priestesses are very sexual and have many partners and have children, and they're like very high up on the caste system in Perinthian, I guess. And she is single and, like, was best friends with Tamlin. I don't know if there's, like, something between them, but I feel like there is in the future. I don't remember. Anyway, we spent a lot of time talking about how beautiful Ianthe is. Like, there's a whole section about her manicured hands.
I slaved over.
I was like, why are we talking about her so much? This bitch disappears in like a chapter. Anyway, so everyone's so grateful for Feyre saving them that she's not allowed to do anything around the house and she's super bored.
She doesn't even want to paint anymore, which I thought was sad.
Sad.
And also, like, Feyre briefly talks about, like, the winter solstice and how it was, like, the most important holiday and how she was bored and she had to endure the winter solstice, which I think is a really funny juxtaposition to the night court experience.
Like, yeah, in the night court, it's, like, a really amazing family time that they celebrate together and it's such, like, it feels like Christmas. And here she's like, ugh, I have to endure another celebration with all these people.
Also, so, her birthday fell on the longest night during winter solstice, and she didn't tell anyone.
She didn't tell anybody. No. So she turned 20 silently. And
it's supposed to be
Anthony's
fun.
Like, oh. Great reference.
I'll be quiet again.
No. Feel free to interject whenever. It'd be fun to get opinions on anything you have an opinion on. Anyway, and Ianthe is like, oh, we're both so beautiful and young. Like, we're going to have so much fun together. Like, that's how she's talking to Feyre about her wedding. Anyway, so it's been 3 months and Rhysand made a barter, a trade,
bargain.
A deal, a bargain. That's the word I'm looking for with her. She's supposed to go to his kingdom. Town, place, castle for a week every month, and it's been 3 months and they haven't heard from him, so I feel like he's been biding up his time so he can take 3 months, he can take 3 weeks at a time, right? Is that what's gonna happen? He's gonna be like, I've accrued 3 weeks with you. I don't know. Well, I remember when he shows up right before I do. he speaks now or forever holds his peace right before her and Tamlin's wedding.
Yep.
That was another Taylor Swift for you.
Damn.
Also, Lucien doesn't really like Ianthe because he doesn't forgive her for fleeing when Amarantha came.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And at the end of the chapter, Feyre and Tamlin have sex, and it gives me the ick because I just...
Oh, okay. Well, there's more to it than that. So everyone's calling her lady because they don't know what to call her now because she's a high fae.
Oh,
but like she's not really a lady. And so they just call her lady nothing, like just lady instead of her name. And so Tamlin is like seducing her at the end of the day. And she's like, so when we get married, will I have a title? Because she's kind of feeling uncomfortable. Everyone just calling her lady. And he's like, do you want a title? And he's like going down on her. And she's like, I don't know. I'm having a hard time imagining anyone calling me high lady. And he's like, oh, there's no such things as high ladies. There's just like high, what is he again? High men. High men. High fae.
Prince? High fae?
High
lord.
High lords. High lords. High lords only take consorts. And high ladies don't exist. There's no such thing. So you'll just be a lady.
There is.
And she's like trying to argue it. And she's like, but Lucien said, and he's like, I don't want to hear another male on your lips right now.
And wow. Yeah.
And then she just shuts up because she's trying to like be like, why aren't there such a thing as a high lady? Like, this is fucking bullshit. But she doesn't get it out because he puts his tongue back on her and she shuts up. And I was like, ew, this is nasty right now. Like, he is completely just trying to distract her from arguing for her own rights to be a high lady of the Spring Court. So it's really nice foreshadowing for what will happen.
Yes. Well, also... it's just very toxic. Like, the whole time, Feyre is basically just complaining about her life. But then she's like, when Tamlin and I come together, this is what I cherish. Like, when he treats me like this.
For him. I know. And she's like, and now I get to live with it for the rest of my life. She's not enthused. She's like, I saved him at the expense of myself. Like, she broke herself into pieces to save him and Perinthian.
And she's like, I don't know if I'll ever be able to fix myself. It's really sad. That's
chapter one and two
chapters. So next week we'll be doing chapters 3 and 4. Catch up with us. You have to read all of ACOTAR, but we've been reading it for a really long time. So if you were going to read it, you probably read it with us already. We read it, Tiernan, over a series of 30 weeks.
Oh, wow. I mean, it's a big book. Time.
Amy says, do you want to read it now, Tiernan?
I do. Every time I hear someone like diving into it this way, I'm like, really? Very curious. Yeah.
Okay. Because I can tell you that Alex has no interest in reading this book after editing almost 30 episodes. He's like,
well,
this sounds
he heard
stupid.
Us break it down chapter by chapter in a way where we made fun of Tamlin constantly. Like, sure. We just tore him apart.
I've considered going straight to Crescent City. And I've been told
you can.
I can do that. Yeah, right.
You can, yeah. But wait, have you read Throne of Glass at all?
No.
Okay. So what I'm realizing after reading the second Crescent City is there is a lot of nods to things that might be coming into play from Throne of Glass. And Natasha, I really think you should catch up. Okay. Throne of Glass. Because I read those over such a long period of time that I didn't pick up on a lot of different cues that when I was talking about it in my book talk, a lot of people in the comments were pointing things out. And I was like, oh, fuck. Mm. Like, because it's been so long since I read The Throne of Glass that, like, I don't remember those little details. And then pointing it out, and I was like, oh, my. Okay. That's interesting. So, like, they all might come into play eventually. But you can definitely start with Crescent City because there haven't been any, like, big spoilers there. Yeah, so. Crescent City book one is so fucking good.
Yeah, I bought it. Like, it's the only one I own.
Yeah, it's so good. I like it with my eyes better than the audiobook narrator.
I read it with my, especially at the end. I read half the audiobook with like the first half, and then the end I was like, vroom, 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 vroom.
And then when she says end, it's the last like 400 pages or like you can't stop.
That's what I meant.
Can't stop, won't stop.
Wow. Last half.
Very, very good. But all right. So Tiernan, before we end the show, where can we find you on the internet? Like, what? Tell us.
Yeah. You could find me on Instagram. It's Tiernan B-E. T-I-E-R-N-A-N-B-E. Same on Twitter, but like not really there too much anymore, but you know, here and there. And then on YouTube as the BookTuber.
On YouTube as the BookTuber. And I highly recommend, I'm going to link the wheel. Wait, what is the video called?
Oh my God.
The Wheel of YA Titles. Yeah. Because I've talked about, I've referenced it on the show before. Yeah. And this is my favorite Tiernan video.
That's how I feel about the newest Sarah J Maas title. It's about like breath and air and sky.
Breath and sky.
The newest one though is even more. It's House of Shadow and Flame. Flame and Shadow.
Like,
that's so confusing. Why?
We've already had Shadow in so many Sarah J Maas titles and so many flames and houses.
Oh my God. We should do another one. You could do a whole wheel video about Sarah J Maas titles. Yes. A palace of dreams and starlight.
Oh my God.
I actually like that a lot.
I do too. I was like, that's actually a good one. I like that better than her Court of Frost and Starlight.
Oh, Starlight, yeah.
Oh my God. Wait, Tiernan, you should make that video. It'd be so funny.
I'll get the wig back out.
Can I come and be someone you make a title for?
Christine, I would love to do this.
Let's collab. Bring it back. Oh my gosh. We could do it for like reels.
Yeah.
Yes. Would be great.
I'm down.
Okay, we're doing it. All right.
So go find Tiernan. We're going to link his stuff in the description. The show is edited by Alex Polas and Jake Needham, with music by Cole Jenkins and vocals by Heather Traska. We release new episodes every Friday. My name's Christine.
I'm Natasha.
I'm Tiernan.
We'll see you next week. Thank you so much for joining us. Oh, and we're about to go record Fangirl Tea Time. If you're a patron, that's coming up right after this.